to our next guest. Tomorrow is World Refugee Day. And Sara Ahmed is our guest now. She works in Christchurch as a refugee health nurse, helping new arrivals find their footing in a strange new land. It's a journey she has also undertaken herself. She was born in Mogadishu, the capital of Somalia, and nursing has taken her around the world, working with Red Cross, including being deployed to Sierra Leone for the Ebola response. Today, as well as working as a refugee health nurse, she is the chair of the Canterbury Somali Association. She's alive with me now in our Christchurch studio. Sara, tēnā koe and welcome.
Tēnā koe, kia ora and salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum, wa salam alaikum to you as well. And thank you for coming in today. We really appreciate your time. You came to New Zealand as an asylum seeker, and I think that's something that people forget is there is a difference between an asylum seeker and a refugee. What is the difference between an asylum seeker and a refugee?
It is not sometimes not straightforward to understand it. So we talked about the quota refugee, and that may be what most people are familiar with. So quota refugees are the people who the UNHCR, the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, recognizes as a genuine refugees who are in another country, says that they need to be resettled. And they come through an agreement that New Zealand have signed a long time ago, and that means resettling about 1,000 people, and supposed to go up last year to 1,500, from 1,000 to 1,500, but that was put to pause by the COVID-19. But hopefully we will start once things established, and that was due to flights not being available and MIQs and all the other resources that we need to make sure that everybody is safe and settled well. So asylum seeker is someone who seeks asylum or asks for refugee status while they're in the country. And they can come in a different situation. So some people can come as students and maybe the end of their studies or sometime during their studies. Some people come at the airport as a visitor and seek it there. Some other may be on a ship. So that means basically when the person is in the country and asking for refugee status, that's what asylum seeker is.
And you came as an asylum seeker.
And I came as an asylum seeker.
At a very young age,
yes.
Essentially. What did you know about New Zealand before you came here?
Not a lot, to be honest. I mixed up a few countries, I guess. There's a lot of lands, like in Switzerland, Finland, those kind of things. With the opportunity, actually, to come here through a really convenience of getting a visa because it was getting harder to go anywhere else. So I arrived in 1990, August the 6th, I think it was. It was a really, really cold, drizzly day. And I came out of the airport and had no idea what the weather was like. So it was basically, I'm not making up, I was wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
A Hawaiian shirt? In the middle of winter, probably, in New Zealand.
It was the coldest, coldest I ever experienced. And remember driving from the airport to the hostel we stayed, which had been, it's been for a while. So I haven't been in Auckland for the last sort of like 30 years. Yeah. I didn't stay there too long. And I think the place was called St. Paul's Church on Simon Street.
Yes.
And they had a hostel they run for asylum seekers. And there were actually a few of us then because it was a bit easier to come through, but now it's really harder. Yeah. And being an island country, it's really impossible to come other way than either quota or reunification or some other ways. Yeah.
You weren't aware of the political situation when you were a child in Mogadishu and in your country at the time when it was undertaking or going through a lot of political upheaval. Mm-hmm. Why did your family make the decision to send you and I think your brother on asylum to come to New Zealand?
Mm. I guess I was thinking about it, you know, as this morning. No country goes to war just overnight. Some of the symptoms are there for a long time, but as a child, you are protected from the things that are obvious to adults. So my earliest memory is that things were not really that good. Is that our neighbors had 3 boys that were imprisoned, and some of them, I think, was were executed and they were killed. So that was it. But my immediate environment was quite safe. There was a food shortage, and it was not necessarily due to drought or anything, but it was political, that giving license of importing food or running business to few chosen people. So the prices were really hiked. Education was going down when I started. First year was totally different to when I was year 8. And the quality of education, quality of teachers. Teachers were not paid that well. When I started, we were given books and pencils by the state, till we ended up almost, you know, remember one class, we were 70 kids. And you can imagine the quality of a teaching. There's actually none, because no human being can keep up with 70 kids.
Very little contact.
With very little contact.
Direct contact.
Yes. Sometimes the teacher didn't even know who was who. Anybody could say yes when they calling out the roles.
That must have been a very heavy decision for your parents, for your family to make, to send two of their children away to a country that potentially many people in Mogadishu had never heard of before.
That's right.
And to come to New Zealand. I mean, what was that like? Have you talked about that with your parents?
I have, and I guess it was a very hard decision because we were both really, really young. So I was about 20 and he was 17, but we thought we grew up, but we'd grown up. But as a parent now, I can imagine, you know, I understand how I don't feel my daughter's ready for the world, and I tried to hold on to her, but them was very brave of them to do that. And it was a hard decision for them to let us go, but it was just worse. It was getting worse. And within 6 months of arriving, the civil war started. So we just happened to be lucky to get out on time before it all full blown.
And eventually you make your way to Christchurch, even colder than Auckland.
It's true. Christchurch, I mean, Auckland, I liked it, but it just was something about it that I didn't feel it was for me. But arrived Christchurch in June, which was a really cold day. And I remember my friend, you know, pulling the curtains. She said, have a look outside. And I looked it. And she said, oh, have you seen that? And I said, what, see what? She says that. And she was referring to hard frost or snow. And that was the first time I ever seen. So there was a few things that sort of like stand out. The quietness of the streets is really something that most people struggle with when they come to New Zealand, because we come from where you see people. But
Dense population.
I think also it's a cultural thing. People come out of their houses. I think the closest I could say Kiwi's experience is during the lockdown, and people were talking to their neighbours at the end of the street, talking. But that was our life. That was very normal. And shutting your door and not knowing next door is just, to us, it's really strange, strange idea. So for us, coming and seeing no one on the roads, and thinking first few days, maybe there's something special going or something, and then it's every day like that. It's quite concerning. And actually, silence is bad. You know, silence is terrible as, noise. You know, like, it's quite unsettling if quietness, you're not used to it. Yeah.
And these are the things that people still struggle with when they come to New Zealand now, is it?
Yes, they do. They do. They will say, oh, where everybody else, you know, and you say, oh, they're in their house or they're at work. People don't hang around the streets, you know, like to talk to the neighbours or go to the shops by, you know, walking. And, you know, few do, but not like in Africa, you know, everybody's out there and you come home to sleep or to, you know, that's your home, but really, a lot of things happen outside the house.
So how do you help refugees who come to New Zealand now?
I've been nursing for about nearly 25 years now. I've done different types of nursing. My role now is I work with a primary healthcare organisation, and there's a few of them around. So the one I work with is, we've got three in Canterbury. So the one I work is called Pegasus Health. Mm. But I work with people who go different, you know, different areas. So we don't just stop with our primary healthcare organizations' connections. So my role is as a refugee health nurse. It is a bit hard to explain to people who are not familiar with. Once people when people come out to New Zealand after they've gone through the UN screening, New Zealand accepts them as a quote refugee, they will come to Mangere, and then they'll be there about 5-6 weeks, and just basically starting them their new life and starting things like having IRD number, bank account, just basic laws in New Zealand. So preparing their new life. So after 5 weeks, then people are allocated to go to different regions. So Canterbury is one of those regions, Christchurch, and it's recently Ashburton started and got their first family. So then this is where my role comes in. So when I know the people are coming, then I connect them to a GP, healthcare. So everybody is enrolled with a GP in New Zealand. Most of Kiwis know that. Not necessarily everybody is. And my role is that to make sure that they connect to the health system, because people don't realize sometimes how, you know, we connect to the health system by, if you're born here, the system knows that you're born. So you got the NHI number, which is the National Health Index number. The oral health knows that you're here. The planker knows you're here. But this is different if you're a child who's coming out at the age of one or under five. Not everybody knows you. So I'm making sure that they're getting the health care. So we connect them to a GP, just like anyone else, to have their primary health care, you know, taken care of. And in one and other health services.
How do we support well-being for families and for refugees that come into New Zealand? Because you are dealing with families who, in yesterday, they would have had to prepare in some way to be able to get here in the first place. But what about things like dealing with being so far away from home, about trying to find a job, about the well-being issues that come with all those kinds of things? How well are they supported by us, in your view?
Unfortunately, region to region is very different in New Zealand, even though we a small country and we have even smaller former refugees to resettle. Still, we don't have one system that we can all follow. But I could speak maybe what I'm familiar with. Within our system, with our primary health care, from health point of view, what we done, we consulted the community a few years ago and actually asked them what they want rather than ask what we thought they needed. And to be honest, it was three things mainly. So one was accessibility and affordability and interpreting services. Then accessibility means not to go very far away because it's cheaper. So it has to be somewhere near that they can walk if they have to. And affordability, the cost. So it was going somewhere where it was $18 to maybe $55. And it depended where individual lived. Language was another one that they felt some places did not provide interpreters. And so those things have been addressed. And since it's been addressed, it's been really, the community has been happier. There was a better outcome. You talked about how do we make people to feel included. And inclusiveness is a really, really, really important thing. So sense of belonging is really important when you have left everything you are familiar with. Everybody's a different stage of their life, so there's no one uniform way of people grieving or settling or needing the support. So there's always individuals, and we need to remember that. Some people it takes a little bit longer than others. People to be accepted of who they are and where they come from. Having really valued roles that meaningful, right? Actively, you know, participating in the community's activities. Having social relationship with others, you know, people there from their own culture or people they have a shared interest, could be sport or any other thing. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be with people who look like them, talk like them, comes from same place, but just feeling belonging. And in social inclusiveness is so important. We all know that that will impact on our lives. And it's one of the determinant of health. So if people are isolated, poor health and loneliness and isolation, it's really a poor outcome for their settlement. Yeah. And that's not for the only individual, but for us as a society, we failed. And what I really like to see is to invest in people early enough to, and that means being, you know, having a warm house, you know, affordable food, you know, education, getting support in timely manner, appropriately, and that will go for a lot of people. That's a human thing. When I talk like those things, I really have to remind myself that everybody thinks that we're trying to make the former refugees are very special. But I'm just, because I've been asked questions about the former refugees, that's what I'm saying. That's it, what we need to support them.
We like to see ourselves, New Zealanders generally speaking, as being very socially inclusive. We base, I think, the way in which we treat others very much on values of, I think, our Māori traditional values too, around manaakitanga, being hospitable and looking after others, kaitiakitanga, that spirit of guardianship. Is that what is actually happening? Is that what current refugees are finding at the moment, is that we are a lot more open to social inclusiveness based on those values now than we were when you first became a refugee? Or is it the same or completely different now?
In a lot of ways, it's much better. When I came, basically, no one knew about what was being a refugee is, what asylum seeker was, or most people I knew anyway had no clue. But now everybody's aware of it, and because of the media, I think people are aware of the Syrian war, they're aware of the Somali war, depending on your age and how connected you are to social media. So people are, I think, generally educated. Inclusiveness, it is there, and most Kiwis are very inclusive, but there are always a group who will never make space for anyone else and think that we should look after our own before anybody else. So that element is always going to be there. But vast majority are very welcoming. And former refugees have to be seen as a potential, contributing to our country positively. And like any other group, you have to invest early enough. We invest in early childhood, in primary health, school, we invest in university, we invest in even our old people so they can live healthier and a fulfilling life. We want people to contribute. So therefore, the more we invest early, the better outcome for the individual, their families, and for the country, that their new home. And I know that I've used the word refugee earlier, but actually the right word is to say former refugee. And the reason we use the word former refugee is that once the person is accepted to come to New Zealand, then they got a home now. So therefore, they are former rather than refugee. So we have to get our head around and accept that they are not refugee; they are New Zealand residents and citizens soon.
That's a good point you make, because I was reading a little bit of a profile about you, and your younger brother, essentially, he's a Kiwi. Brought up as a Kiwi in New Zealand, and you're right, I take the point. I think it's a good point you make about that social inclusiveness also, is determined by the way in which we speak to each other and have these kinds of conversations. So it is a point well made. What has to be done in requirements to come to New Zealand in the first place? Talk to us about the process that is undertaken by those who are coming to New Zealand, now Kiwis, formerly refugees.
Yeah.
What do they have to do to get here in the first place?
If we look at it, there's about nearly 80 million refugees in the world, and less than 1% are resettled in other countries. There's only about maybe 27 countries that resettle refugees, and we are one of them, like New Zealand, Australia, United States, Sweden, Norway, there's fewer. If you think most refugees are settled in countries that are not resettling, like Turkey, Lebanon, Ethiopia, there's others who are holding a lot. So it's a really, really small number of people who are getting resettled. Most refugees want to go back home. No one wants to be a refugee. Nothing. We're trying to make the most of what we have. This is not what we would like to, but this is what happened, and we're trying to make the most of it. Therefore, when we're here, or for the former refugees now, is to feel that they're included, they welcome. This is their home, and for a while it may not even feel home for them, because we feel home because from the day we're born we lived in different environment. Mm. And I always say to people, you don't expect every plant to thrive wherever you put them. Where I come from, it's really hot, and mango tree would love it. But if I bring to Canterbury and put it, it will freeze. Yeah. So I have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
So we have to be thinking about how else can we do it. Is there somewhere else we can, some other ways we can make things to be better. It is hard to give up, leave behind everything you've known and start.
Yeah.
For younger people, it may not be as big issue because they still got time to recover of that.
Yeah.
But when you're older, it's definitely harder to adjust to a new place that is different. And most of us, at my age, I wouldn't go to somewhere. Now I have to learn language. I would struggle with that, and I would not. So I could imagine people who are in their 50s, in their 60s who are coming, that will never their language will never improve.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I think, are we also more open now, given, and I won't spend too much time on March 15 here, but have you also seen a visible change, or certainly a change in New Zealand society in the way in which we are trying to be more inclusive as a result of March 15, 2019?
Yes, definitely. Unfortunately, that tragedy has brought the human side of the general public, and every year the mosque here, Dean's Avenue, got an open day to the public, and this shows that things don't have to happen to extreme to acknowledge each other. The year 2018, the open day, there were only two people came through to have a look, and the 2019, there was hundreds and hundreds of people coming. It has to be sort of like shifts to go through it. But something like March 15 shouldn't happen, people to understand other people. We should do that well before that. And I think I can honestly and genuinely think that most Kiwis have really had a thought about it and had a good look of who they are and care about others, view. Mm.
And I'm interested to see what you think about this proposed movie that's been talked about a lot over the last week or 2 weeks. Focus on, certainly on the Prime Minister, on Jacinda Ardern, and what she did the week following March 15. It is a big issue. It seems to have been discussed a lot. I mean, I'm interested simply in your perspective on that.
I guess it's quite clear that what the public think. If you look at it, even non-Muslims have reacted strongly to it. I think it's a repulsive idea, a ill thought, and it's a terrible thing. And I know as time passes, it will become some kind of entertainment for another generation. But could we at least wait till at least the graves of those people settle? So I think it's about timing. We cannot silence people. But I think the timing was horrible and was insensitive.
Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the program this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having
me. Really appreciate your time, and really good to have you here as well. That was Sarah Ahmed.